You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Cornelia Lau. Cornelia, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Let's talk about what you're working on now, Cornelia. I know you've done so many projects, curatorial projects and book projects and wonderful research projects. What is it that you're excited about now?
I'm excited about the fact that you're interviewing me and the way you describe the format that you are executing these interviews with, the Lives of the Artist formula, because I am also a trained art historian, and I come at contemporary art with a background in art history, and basically that motivates the way I look at all my projects. So the recent projects have been a book about certificates of authenticity by artists from Duchamp on up, and that was really a lot of fun to work on. About 70 artists and how they define themselves, Manzoni, Eve Klein. I did that with Susan Hapgood, who's at ISCP, and we did a show, a traveling show. That was a lot of fun. And I've done, you know, as you know, a lot in artist book publishing. But now my feeling about the way art is moving and the fact that the sponsor and the patron is the top dog, a very Renaissance concept, I'm basically curating commissions that are unique commissions, custom commissions. And that's the novelty in my professional life.
And how does that work exactly? What does that mean, commissions? What would be an example of that?
Well, I kind of got the idea having founded a company called Three Star Books with two partners and having spent about 10 years making high-end custom handmade artist books after 15 years in offset publishing, I realized that actually the patrons who are buying these types of things have really specific interests and aesthetics, and that on some level one can create for that type of patron. And I like the rapport between the patron, the artisan, the artist. I like to credit the gallery. I'm really into teamwork and into making sure that all people who are involved in a project get their credit and get their pay. And so basically I'm now a mediator. When an artist has a project, I kind of make it happen as a producer. I mean, if I was in the movie business, it would be like making movies. But in the art world, you know, it can be anything from doing a set of dishware by an artist to a performance to mounting, you know, an exhibition like I'm doing now, or doing catalogs for artists. I've been working for artists for 30 years, as you know, and really great ones. So that's what I just keep on doing.
How does that work? Are you,
with contracts. And if the artist, for example, is mostly it's for swap, or I work on a kind of, I mean, if I work for non-artist clients, then of course there's a payment incorporated. For example, right now I'm curating a series of carpets by artists for New York publisher Petra Singh. She has Equator Productions. And so we have an arrangement between the two of us, and it's kind of always a risk-taking. You just each time set up a business proposition for each job that's different. Sometimes it's swap, sometimes it's cash, sometimes it's part of an addition that gets made. I mean, each time it's different and depends on the figures that are involved. This time we're doing, I'm involved in an agency I co-founded called Golden Ruler. I'm kind of like big into founding small entities. I have since the 80s made just little initiatives that are art historical ideals in themselves, and they just function as business and cultural models. That's kind of what is interesting to me.
That's very interesting to me too. So in the context of the Golden Ruler, and maybe even as you were saying earlier, you know, there's almost a moving almost back to a Renaissance model with the patrons and artists and what they want. You said earlier that, you know, when producing certain editions of books, high-end editions of books, that, you know, and I may be not remembering exactly what you said correctly, but that you realize that collectors, those type of collectors, want something specific. And I don't think that's exactly what you said, but I kind of want to know, what is it exactly that that they do want, and what is it that you're appealing to there when we talk about collaborations or artist projects, if that makes sense?
Well, it's a very different model than producing into the void, which is kind of what most, you know, industrial production is like. In the mid-'80s, I was hired by Memphis through Pierana Cavalcini to work on a series in glass for them. And the first projects I started were with Jan Verkruijs and Jeff Koons. I guess this must have been like 88, something like that. I was very young. I was 26. And Jeff outpowered me and just went right to the glass artisan and made the piece himself without me. And the third artist with General Idea, they proposed a glass chandelier to look like black pubic hair out of spun glass. And so the client mixed that as well. So my career in these kind of custom multiples wasn't as solicitous as it is now, but I learned fast. And basically, the idea is that a client, and for example, last week's client is the great glass company Seguso. They would like to kind of get into the contemporary art thing, and so they asked me to do a series of appointments in contemporary art in glass. So I'm matching artists with their great maestros, and I'm working for the artist and for the small glass company. You know, it's a kind of a custom project that is tailored to a very small company that is an artisanal reality. And I'm trying to match them, the right artist who understands that and works with them to create something really beautiful. So in a way, it's an update of what I did with Memphis 30 years ago. And everything comes around full circle. But at the time of Memphis, which was the same time as Swatch, if you remember Swatch, or when BMW was doing those cars by artists, basically one would produce, you know, 12 million Keith Haring watches, and then just create a campaign around them. This is sort of much more microscopic. It's about figuring out, you know, is there a client out there who wants to have hand-blown glass goblets by Tristano di Robiland or by Jonathan Monk, a glass bowl by Jonathan Monk, or a glass goblet by Emilio Prini? And then I kind of make it happen on every level, like production-wise and in placing it in the right place. And it's a small addition. I'm never doing, you know, mass production things. And I also work on image and strategy and whatever curatorial entails, which is
that's
a lot.
That sounds exciting. Yeah, that it is. That sounds exciting. And are most of the artists very well-known artists, or do you also work with artists who are not so well-known?
Yeah, I mean, since the 80s, I've always looked at, you know, both the total unknowns and the superstars, and somehow great art is great art, and so I don't distinguish between, you know, and it has no passport. I mean, there's just no age and no nation and no race in art, as you know. And so one just kind of tries to go for that timber, that good quality. I have a good eye for unknown people, and I've worked with, you know, at the beginning of their career, great people like Felix Gonzalez-Torres, who was one of my closest friends, and Rikri Tirvanija, who's a great artist. But with Felix, I really had like a certain sense of brotherhood that was so acute that when he died, I just for 10 years couldn't even look at his papers or deal with him. Everybody else was publishing stuff and hauling out their mementos. I was just like frozen. I haven't been able to process either my 20-year marriage with my first husband because it was also so powerful, painful, and beautiful at the same time. So on some level, I'm more comfortable working for other people and a little bit at a remove than farming around in my own life, which even though it's very interesting, but it is after all my life and not art. This is getting very personal, this interview.
Oh,
thank you.
Well,
this is going a little too deep.
Yeah, but I appreciate that because, you know, we're all human and there's a lot of things we go through. Felix Gonzalez-Torres is someone that, you know, his work is enormously powerful, and not having any relationship to him, I have a very still emotional reaction to his work. And I was looking through it, you know, as I was researching more about you before this interview. And I think it's fair to talk about, you know, divorce and death, which I've certainly had a fair share of, and how enormously difficult that is to get over, and how that impacts our career and what we're doing. You know, when my mother died and my father died, you know, which were kind of close in succession, it also kind of took me years to recover, as well as, or really never, you know, as well as close friends. So, I think that's
yeah,
fair. And
that is that's very beautifully put. I've never recovered from the divorce, even though I'm happily remarried to a marvelous and fantastic human being. But I have not recovered from that. And I'm actually trying to process it through my work in a real weird way. Like Joseph just did an incredible design for a carpet for the Equator production. And in a way, it's a kind of picture of our marriage. So he processes it as an artist, and I process it by, you know, commissioning things. And when I, for example, with Felix, I got Felix a grant, the Gordon Matta Clark grant. I got Felix a gallery, Xavier Hifkins. I got Felix shows. I put him in his first show in Europe. I mean, I did a lot of stuff which was production stuff, which is just much more than just curating a show. You know, it's like being somebody's life coach and work coach and so on. And then sometimes the artist has such a power that, of course, they go way beyond what, at least what I can offer. And that's fine. I'm like, I love that process too. That's why I do it. So right now I'm kind of, I found some undiscovered but brilliant talent in Sicily, identical twins called Carlo and Fabio Ingrassia, who are just magnificent people and artists. And in Venice, for example, there's a young guy named Thomas Brida and his Albanian girlfriend named Sultana Tusha. They are the real thing, just like in the time of Felix. And in Italy, it's a lot harder to get out. So right now I'm kind of finding talent in Italy, Marco Raparelli. I mean, there's Diego Tonos. There's good people here. I'm trying to get them over the Alps and into the regular world, because it's kind of insular here, I guess, because it's a peninsula, or I don't know what. But that's my current thing.
And so for those artists, what you're doing is, which is part of the Golden Ruler, as I understand it, you're trying to help them to get shows, and similar to what you did with Felix and other artists, help to get them more exposure and build their careers to some extent? Would that be?
Exactly. Exactly. So, and I do it now, you know, professionally, and I receive pay for it. I've been working for Miltus Monetas the last couple of years. He's a brilliant figure who now is in Bogota, Colombia. He has a stash of work here and a stash of work in New York. He's somebody who deserves a real retrospective, and so I plug away on that. I mean, I work with well-known artists, too. I'm probably going to do something for Jonathan Monk for Listen Gallery or one of his big galleries and produce something, because I know how to produce something for him. I mean, I hope I get hired for this gig. There's a London gallery, mega gallery, that wants me to curate something, I hope, I think. I mean, that seemed to be the outcome of the meeting that we had last week. I mean, there's, like, other jobs that are not all grassroots. You know, I work with fabulous dealers like Virginia Green of Los Angeles, with fabulous galleries, fabulous museum people. I'm doing a show for MoCA Cleveland on the carpet by artists. It's supposed to kind of put the whole carpet artist thing into historical perspective. I'm just a cornucopia, Brainerd.
You are. So it sounds like you're also all around the world. I mean, you're based in Rome and you're living in Rome, but your curatorial practice, it sounds like, takes you all around the world continually.
It does. I mean, I don't have a budget to go all around the world all the time, but you know how it is in the art world. You just put on your, like, you take your little trolley and you get on your Ryanair. I mean, a lot of it looks very glamorous on Facebook, but the truth is that we're dragging our bags from sofa to sofa. And even though I live on some level in a very, you know, swanky way, but the reality of it, even for my first husband or my second husband who's a farmer, is hard as hard. It's just hard. So basically, at 54, I'm still slogging away, but I don't mind it. I'm kind of used to it. I've been 30 years in the freelance thing after starting at the Guggenheim and at Christie's, and realizing that much as I like the kind of institution around me, I'm better as a I don't know, what are they called, you know, when you can, when you just freelance for different institutions.
But since you've seen so much, what is it? What do you see in terms of centrality in the art world, or the importance of cities? I mean, you're talking about these artists getting over the Alps and what it means to be in places that seem insular or you know, the equivalent to not allowing artists to, in a sense, spread their wings. Is there better places to make art? Do you feel that that artists need to be
good
near
question.
Cities is kind of what I'm saying?
Yeah, excellent question. And also, I can see, again, that you're operating out of a historical perspective as well. Well, being here in the Mediterranean and feeling so, you know, more linked to Syria and Iraq in terms of proximity than to Paris or London even, the events down there of the last couple of years have not gone unnoticed, you know, also just in terms of cultural practice. And so I'm very acutely aware of art, contemporary art, in a historical continuum, which is, you know, not only 2,000 years old, like here in Rome, where I look out at the Vatican every day, but thousands and thousands of years old. And so on some level, if you measure up the work being done, you know, to some Cycladic figure or some Etruscan tomb sculpture or a Renaissance fresco or a, you know, a Baroque fountain, which is how I basically have to look at art because I just compare, then very little of what's happening now is really of colossal interest. And so I just try to cherry pick what I think has really got the same kind of magnitude and work with those things and work on a huge long scale, you know, long-term plan of what's important. I try to make masterpieces happen with geniuses. I mean, I'm not a, you know, genius per se, but I'm a kind of good midwife. Maybe I wasn't the best wife, but I'm a good I'm a good editor and home curator and midwife and probably a good mom, because that's my favorite job of all, but that's not for this radio program.
Well, I think kids are fair game too. I have a 14-year-old, and I think there's something about kids and how children change the way you look at things. For a while, I was always trying to hide the fact that I had a child, as my wife and I were trying to get more shows in the art world, and even after the Whitney Biennial, we were trying to hide the fact that we had a child, which was hard because, you know, you have to make meetings and get babysitters. And I'll never forget one meeting with a curator through Whitney, and we were asking her about or giving her different proposals, and she said, "Oh, why don't you do this?" She wants us to do some kind of an artist tour, and I said, "Yeah, but there's another artist right now in the Biennial that does that. Why wouldn't you ask him?" And she said, "Well, I just love working with people who have kids." and I was so
nice.
Shocked, you know. You know, it was just amazing to hear.
Yeah, when we had when I was with Joseph and we had our first daughter, he was so shocked by this appendix to us that he would not carry her if she had on any color other than white or black. And in the early 90s, it was very difficult to find black baby buggies or black clothes for infants. So I ended up, you know, fresh with a cesarean, hauling this kid around for years because we never had any outfits that would match his outfit, which of course was rigorously black. I mean, I by that time had scrapped my burqa because part of the art world thing is to dress the part, you know, which is something interestingly that ISIS and the fundamentalist jihadis have absconded with from the post Haight Ashbury avant-garde that wore black. But certainly when I was first with children in the art world, it was just really impossible to make it go with a really cool lifestyle. And I think that's probably also why my marriage kind of faltered, because I did not know how to mediate the two. And of course I opted for the humdrum Hausfrau role. But my kids are pretty sane and pretty great, and so I guess all that boring slugging it out at home had some kind of good value. And say, I wish I had, you know, I could tell you I had a top level job with a top level Metropolitan Museum permanent job with pension benefits at the end. I do not, but I have done other things. I guess there's something. Well, anyway.
Well, you've done a lot of wonderful things. From, I remember the first lectures I heard of you talking about boys to the golden ruler and what you're doing now. I'm looking forward to the projects you're doing in the future. But before we close, is there any other project you want to mention about what you're going to do, or something for people to look for, like the artist you mentioned?
Well, I'm going to do a pitch, which is kind of typical of the way I am right now. Why don't we cook up something, Brainerd? Because I like your approach and your attitude, and you can see that I can work in many different ways. Somebody just pitched to me the other idea of doing, tombs by artists, and they wanted to curate something like that, which is it's kind of an up and coming field, I think. At any rate, I'm interested in all kinds of practices, including audio practices, and I think that the scope of your project and your anthropological attitude towards it really puts you way outside of a U.S.-centric, or even Anglo-Saxon-centric discourse and into something that is just, I think you're on the top level there. I'd be very honored and happy to collaborate with you in the future. So let's think of something together as our future project to mention.
Thanks so much. I'd love to do that. Cornelia, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and work.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.